You are listening to Coffee Before Pants. Hello, and welcome once again to another episode of Coffee Before Pants, the podcast for writers, readers, poets, and storytellers. This is the 17th episode of Coffee Before Pants, and I just want to thank everyone for listening and downloading. I do this podcast because I love to, but knowing that people are listening makes it even better. Today, I'm going to continue on with celebrating the Irish authors and poets. This is in celebration of not just St. Patrick's Day, which is only a few days away, but for the month of March in all, mostly because it has seemed a long wait, but I think spring is finally here. It isn't far away. There are and have been hundreds of writers that hailed from the Emerald Isle. I feel even with four episodes, I'm merely scratching the surface. My goal at the outset was not to only cover authors who are more or less well-known, but to also talk about others you may not have heard of. Quite a few I haven't heard of either. But now I certainly have more authors on the onerous and ever-growing, ever-expanding to-be-read list. If you like what you hear on the podcast, please seek out the like and or subscribe button on your preferred podcast platform. Although this statement has not been approved by the Food and Drug Administration, it does a body good. But before we jump in the circle tonight, it's time for this week's Coffee with Culture, a history of literature, music, art, and film. March 10th, 1964, Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel recorded the acoustic version of The Sound of Silence. Later, the record company would add electric guitar, bass, and drums without the knowledge of either performer and release the song as a single. The single reached number one in New Year's Day 1966. And was included in the 1966 album Sounds of Silence. The song was also, of course, used by Mike Nichols in the 1967 film The Graduate, along with Mrs. Robinson. March 11, 1959, Lorraine Hansberry's stage drama, A Raisin in the Sun, first Broadway play by a black woman, starring Ruby Dee and Sidney Poitier, opens at the Ethel Barrymore Theater, New York City. Later transfers to the Belasco Theater, runs for 530 performances. March 11, 1968, Otis Redding had his only gold record with Sittin' on the Dock of the Bay. It was released on Stax Records' Volt label 3 months after Redding's untimely demise in a plane crash in Madison, Wisconsin. Redding started writing the lyrics to the song in August of 1967 while he was sitting on a rented houseboat in Sausalito, California. He completed the song with the help of Stax producer and session guitarist Steve Cropper. March 12, 1922, beat poet Jack Kerouac was born in Lowell, Massachusetts. Along with Allen Ginsberg, William Burroughs, and Lawrence Ferlinghetti, Kerouac was a driving force behind the Beat Generation. Today, his most popular works are On the Road, The Subterranean, and Desolation Angels. He died in 1969 at the young age of 47 from an esophageal hemorrhage, which was the result of years of alcohol abuse. March 12, 1955, in New York City, legendary jazz saxophonist Charlie Bird Parker, only 34, died of heart failure. Parker, along with Dizzy Gillespie and a few others, had more or less invented the then-radical form of bebop jazz in the mid-40s. He remains a tremendous influence. March 12, 2013, Bob Dylan was voted into the American Academy of Arts and Letters. Finally, marking the first time a rock musician has been chosen for the elite honor society. It took him long enough. March 13th, 1922, George Bernard Shaw's final installment of his Methuselah play series premiered in New York City. Shaw's plays were referred to as a metabiological pentateuch. Overall, the plays range in settings from 4004 BC to 31,920 AD. March 14th, 1946, American author Ernest Hemingway married journalist Mary Walsh. Walsh and Hemingway met in London in 1944 while she was on assignment, and they began an affair, despite both being married to other people. They married in Cuba, and Walsh remained his companion until Hemingway's death by suicide in 1961. March 14th, 1946, American film noir classic Gilda, starring Rita Hayworth and Glenn Ford, and directed by King Vidor, premieres in New York City. March 15th, 44 BC, a faction of Roman senators assassinated Julius Caesar in the Capitol in order to stop him from seizing the throne for himself. This dramatic act of betrayal or enfranchisement, depending on how you look at it, is famously depicted in Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, which is read and acted out in English classrooms all around the world. Beware the Ides of March. March 15, 1972, The Godfather, based on the book by Mario Puzo, directed by Francis Ford Coppola, and starring Marlon Brando and Al Pacino, premieres in New York City, and it won the Academy Awards Best Picture in 1973. March 15, 1982, another long-time coming award for Bob Dylan after nearly 20 years as a singer-songwriter, is finally inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame, which was formed in 1969. March 16, 1850, Nathaniel Hawthorne's famous novel, The Scarlet Letter, was published in Boston. Although Hawthorne did not believe it would be much of a seller, the book sold well and is today his most popular novel. The book's growing demand also led to an increase in publication, making The Scarlet Letter the first mass-produced book in American history. March 16, 1945, the number one song in America is Rum and Coca-Cola by the Andrews Sisters. It's a sanitized cover of a Calypso song about American servicemen in Trinidad who get drunk and solicit prostitutes. But you didn't know that. March 16, 2017, blues harmonica player, singer, songwriter, James Cotton died from pneumonia at the age of 81. Cotton worked in Howlin' Wolf's band in the early 50s. In 1955, he was recruited by Muddy Waters to come to Chicago and join his band. In 2006, Cotton was inducted into the Blues Hall of Fame. All right, on to the writers of Ireland. The first writer is most likely Ireland's most well-known poet, although he is also known as a playwright. And I'm talking about none other than William Butler Yeats. I was introduced to the writing of Yeats by my friend Kent, a longtime friend and major influence on my reading and writing in my younger years. I will admit my reading is not as extensive as it should be, but that's what the To Be Read list is all about. William Butler Yeats was born in Dublin in 1865. His father was a lawyer and well-known portrait painter. His mother, formerly Susan Pollexfen, was the daughter of a prosperous merchant in Sligo in Western Ireland. Yeats was educated in London and Dublin, but spent his summers at his family's summer house in Connaught in Western Ireland. The young Yeats was very much part of the Sandy Circle in London. At the same time, he was also active in societies that attempted an Irish literary revival. His first volume of poetry appeared in 1887, but in his early writing, his dramatic plays outweighed his poetry in both bulk and importance. He founded the Irish Theatre with Lady Gregory, which eventually became the Abbey Theatre, and served as its chief playwright until the movement was joined by John Synge, best known for the play Playboy of the Western World. Yeats' plays usually focus on Irish legend, but also reflect his fascination with mysticism and spiritualism. The Countess Kathleen, The King's Threshold, and Deirdre are among his best-known plays. After 1910, Yeats' dramatic arc took a sharp turn toward a highly poetical and esoteric style. His later plays were written for small audiences and experimented with masks, dance, and music, and were profoundly influenced by Japanese no plays. Although a staunch patriot, Yeats deplored the violence and bigotry of the nationalist movement. His poetry is full of moving protests against it. In 1923, Yeats won the Nobel Prize for Literature, chiefly for his dramatic works. However, his significance and renown rests on his lyric achievement. His poetry, especially the volumes The Wild Swans at Cooley, Michael Robartes and the Dancer, The Winding Stair and Other Poems, and Last Poems and Plays, made him one of the most outstanding and most influential 20th century poets writing in English. William Butler Yeats died January 28, 1939, at the age of 73 in Roquebrune-Cap-Martin, France. However, he is buried in Drumcliff Cemetery in Ireland. I mentioned earlier about Yeats' fascination with mysticism and spiritualism. William Butler Yeats was a member of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. This order was a secret society devoted to the study and practice of occult hermeticism, otherwise known as alchemy, and metaphysics during the late 19th century and early 20th century. Known as a magical order, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn was active in Great Britain and focused its practice on theurgy and spiritual development. Theurgy, according to Radcliffe G. Edmonds III, describes the ritual practice associated with the invocation or evocation of the presence of one or more, especially with the goal of achieving unity with the divine and perfecting oneself. Other members of the Golden Dawn included Bram Stoker, Algernon Blackwood, Arthur Conan Doyle, and Aleister Crowley. Yes. That Aleister Crowley. Apparently, Crowley was too maniacal for other members of the Golden Dawn and was cast out of the group fairly quickly. While researching authors for the podcast, I realized that more well-known authors of Ireland were men. I guess it didn't surprise me, since women artists of all kinds have been downplayed and ignored throughout literary history. Yes, women artists and authors have certainly made great strides in being recognized. However, many women authors and artists have been mostly forgotten in history. The collective amnesia that does not make them any less important. I want to include a few of the forgotten women ignored by much of literary history. As a disclaimer, I have not read many of the women writers that I'm featuring. I was not aware of their existence until I started reading about Irish literary history. However, I'm certainly going to seek out several of the writers' works, adding them to my always mentioned and often mentioned to be read list. Our next writer falls into the category of the ignored and forgotten writers. Molly Keane was an Irish novelist and playwright born in County Kildare, Ireland in 1904. She is best known for her novel Good Behavior, which was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize in 1981. She was hailed at one time as the Nancy Mitford of her day. As well as writing fiction, she was a leading playwright of the 1930s, her work directed by none other than Sir John Gielgud. Between 1928 and 1956, she wrote 11 novels and some of her earlier plays under the pseudonym M.J. Farrell. At the age of 70 in 1981, she published the aforementioned Good Behavior under her own name. The manuscript had languished in a drawer for many years, but she lent it to the actress Peggy Ashcroft. Dame Ashcroft encouraged Keane to publish it. Molly Keane's novels reflect the world she inhabited. She was from a rather serious hunting and fishing, church-going family. Quote, she was educated, as was the custom, in Anglo-Irish households by a series of governesses and then at boarding school. Distant and awkward relationships between children and their parents would prove to be a recurring theme for Keane. Maggie O'Farrell wrote that she writes better than anyone else about the mother-daughter relationship in all its Thorny, Fraught, and Inescapable Complexity. Good Behavior, published by New York Review of Books Classics, is available for purchase on Amazon or wherever you purchase books. It is also available on Kindle and Audible. Our next author is slightly more known than Molly Keen. I know I probably say this a lot about newly discovered writers, either to myself or others, but after reading about author Edna O'Brien, I now want to read more by her. Irish novelist and short story writer Edna O'Brien was born on December 15, 1930, in County Clare, Ireland. While working for publishers Hutchinson in London, she was commissioned by them to write her first novel, The Country Girls, 1960. The first book in a trilogy of novels with The Lonely Girl in 1962 and Girls in Their Married Bliss in 1964. About two young convent-educated Irish girls who rebel against their upbringing and run away to Dublin and London. Her frank treatment of sexuality in these and subsequent novels brought her into conflict with the Catholic Church, of course, and several other novels were banned by the Irish Censorship Board. Her other novels include A Pagan Place, 1970, the story of a young girl growing up in rural Ireland, was winner of the Yorkshire Post Book of the Year Award. Z and Company, filmed as X, Y, and Z, starring Elizabeth Taylor in 1972. Johnny, I Hardly Knew You, 1977, a story of love, murder, and revenge. Now, that's always a good combination. And more recently, Time and Tide, winner of a Writers Guild Award for Best Fiction. That was published in 1992. It is the story of a young wife who faces a personal crisis when she leaves her husband and is forced to fight for the custody of her two sons. She is also the author of a trilogy of novels about modern Ireland, House of Splendid Isolation, published in 1994, in which she writes about Irish nationalism and sectarian violence. Down by the River, 1996, based on the true story of a young Irish rape victim forced to travel to England for a legal abortion. And Wild Decembers, 1999, recently filmed by RTE and about a farmer, Joseph Brennan, and his sister, Breege, living in an isolated rural community. In the Forest, 2002, is based on the true story of a disturbed and abused young man who murdered a young mother, her infant son, and a Catholic priest in the west of Ireland in the 1990s. O'Brien has received several literary awards, among them the Los Angeles Times Book Prize in Fiction, 1990, for Lantern Slides, a collection of short stories set primarily in Ireland. Other collections of short stories include The Love Object, 1968, Mrs. Reinhardt and Other Stories, 1978, and A Scandalous Woman, 1974. She also wrote Mother Ireland, 1976, a travelogue with photographs by Fergus Bourke, and a biography of James Joyce, published in 1999. O'Brien's most recent books are the novel The Light of Evening, 2006, and Byron and Love, 2009. She is a member of Ushdana, an Irish organization founded to promote the arts, and she is an adjunct professor of English literature at University College in Dublin. She's also an honorary member of the American Academy of Letters. Our next Irish writer is the author of the short novels Molloy, Malone Dies, and The Unnameable, and the plays Endgame, Crop's Last Tape, and most famously, Waiting for Godot. Of course, I am referring to none other than Samuel Beckett. Beckett was born in Dublin, Ireland in 1906, the second son of a comfortable middle-class parent who were a part of the Protestant minority in predominantly Catholic society. He was provided with an excellent education, graduating from Trinity College, Dublin, with a major emphasis on French and Italian. His first job was a teacher of English in Paris. In 1931, he returned to Ireland as a lecturer in French literature And he received his master's degree in French from Dublin and subsequently returned to Paris as a teacher in 1932. He made his home in Paris since that time, except for visits abroad and a retreat to the unoccupied zone in Vichy, France, during the period of 1942 to 1944. Beckett found teaching ungenial to his creative activities and soon turned all of his attention to writing. During the 1930s and 40s, his writing consisted of critical studies of Proust and others, poems, and two novels, Murphy and Watt, all written in English. In the late 1940s, he changed from writing in English to writing in French. Part of the reason for this was his basic rejection of Ireland as his homeland. When asked why he found Ireland uncongenial, he said, like his fellow expatriates Joyce and Sean O'Casey, he could not tolerate the strict censorship of so many aspects of life, especially the arbitrary censoring of many works of literature by the Catholic clergy. In addition, the political situation created an oppressive anti-intellectualism. Even after he became famous, he refused to allow some of his plays to be presented in Ireland. In 1958, during the International Theatre Festival in Dublin, a play of his compatriot O'Casey was banned, and Beckett, in protest, withdrew his plays, which have not been seen in Ireland since then. Samuel Beckett died on December 22, 1989, in Paris at the age of 83. He is buried in the Cimetière du Montparnasse. Well, that wraps it up just about for that for this episode. I'll be back next week with some more writers, Irish writers, to talk about. Doing here and would like to support the podcast, you can do so by visiting my Etsy shop for Coffee Before Pants and other literary-themed merchandise and apparel. The other way is that you can buy me a virtual coffee, which is kind of like a virtual tip jar, at coffee.com. I'll post the link in the summary section on the Podbean platform. Now, I hope you are all having a good week and enjoying the coming of spring, and I hope you find some good books to read. And as usual, before we close, it's time for Poem of the Week. This was my first introduction to William Butler Yeats. Thanks again to my friend Kent. When You Are Old by William Butler Yeats. When you are old and gray and full of sleep and nodding by the fire, take down this book and slowly read and dream of the soft look your eyes had once and of their shadows deep. How many loved your moments of glad grace and loved your beauty with love false or true? But one man loved the pilgrim soul in you and loved the sorrows of your changing face. And bending down beside the glowing bars, murmur a little sadly how love fled and paced upon the mountains overhead and hid his face amid a crowd of stars.
Thank you. Well, in the merry month of May, now from me home I started, left the girls and two, and nearly broken hearted, saluted father dear, kissed me darling mother, drank a pint of beer, me grief and tears to smother, then off to reap the corn and leaf, for I was born, God has dealt me for the banished ghost, and goblets a brand new pair of brogues to rot the love of the bogs, and frighten all the dogs on the rocky road, to double a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to here, and turn her down the rocky road, and all the ways to double a McFalaldy-Dah. In Mullingar that night I rested him, so weary started by daylight, next morning light, and there he took a drop of the pure to keep me heart and strength, and that's the paddy's cure, when there he's up for drinking, they hear the lassie smile, laughing all the while, at me curious style, to touch a heart above him, they asked me, was I hired and wages I required, till I was almost tired of the rocky road, to double him 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, hunt to hare and turn her down the rocky road, and all the way to double him, McFalaldy-Dah. In Dublin next arrived, I thought it such a pity to be so soon deprived of view of Dublin city, then I took a stroll, all among the quality, on the lip was stowel, in the neat locality, something crossed me mind, when I looked behind, no wonder could I find, upon me stick a warrant inquiring after the rogue, said me cunnest brogue, it wasn't much in vogue, on the rocky road, to double him 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, hunt ahead and turn him down the rocky road, and all the ways to double him, McFalaldy-Dah. From there I got away, me spirits never failing, landed on the quay just as the ship was sailing, captain at me rowed, set that down him hardy, when I jumped aboard a cab and flew for paddy, down among the pigs, did some hearty rigs, I paid some hearty jigs, the water ruined me bubbling, when the folly head, I wished myself was dead, or better far instead, on the rocky road, to double him 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to here and turn him down the rocky road, and all the ways to double him, McFalaldy-Dah. The boys have lived for fuel, when we safely landed, called myself the fool, I could no longer stand it, blood began to boil, temper I was new as impure, all there in Zyle, they began abusing her, me so well says I'm a shillelagh, I let fly, Galway boys were by, and so I was a hobbling with the low hooray, the joy and in the affray, quickly clear the way, for the rocky road, to double him 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, hunt the hare and turn her down the rocky road, and all the ways to double him, McFalaldy-Dah.
You have been listening to Coffee Before Pants, a Quinn Martin production.